Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. More than a decade ago, Detroit's Henry Ford Health System set out to radically transform its mental health delivery system with an audacious goal: eliminating suicides. The Zero Suicide Initiative is an approach developed by neuropsychiatrist Dr. Ed Coffey, who is now the president and CEO of the Menninger Clinic and a professor of psychiatry at the Baylor College of Medicine. Dr. Coffey will be giving a free public talk on zero suicide on October 17th in Santa Fe and October 18th in Albuquerque, and we are very pleased that this brings him to our show. Dr. Ed Coffey, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here, and I'm looking forward to my visit at your two wonderful cities.
Great. First, I really have to ask, whatever prompted you to pick such what seems like an unobtainable goal and such an ambitious goal as zero suicides?
We were actually involved in an international initiative called Pursuing Perfection. This was a collaborative initiative with a goal of trying to develop an approach in which healthcare could rapidly and dramatically improve itself. This desire emanated from the realization that American healthcare isn't as good as it could be, given the great science that we have and given the great people within healthcare. That gap between what's possible, what could be, and what we have is quite large. So this initiative was an effort to take some evidence-based strategies and apply them to a healthcare organization. Many hundred organizations applied for this funding. We were one of the 12 finalists.
Were there a lot of behavioral health organizations that applied, or were you one of the few?
There were very few that applied, and we were the only organization that I think received the finalist grant.
I see.
And so our project was called Perfect Depression Care. The goal was to try and make depression care perfect. And the challenge, of course, with this initiative was that you were required to bring about this transformation in 2 years.
So that seems impossible.
It's almost impossible. And we sort of we were struggling to find something that was a real grabber, you know, that was audacious and that would really inspire the team to a high level of performance. Our initial definition was, you know, to reduce depression scores by about 50%, which is what the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, requires before it approves a new antidepressant medication, for
example.
So
that alone would be a remarkable achievement.
That alone would be stupendous.
Yeah.
But we learned pretty quickly that that wasn't what the grant proponents were looking for. They wanted something more audacious than that. So we went back to the drawing board and had a variety of focus group conversations, not only with our own teammates, but with patients, their families, community advocates, and so on. And finally, you know, within a matter of days before the grant was finally due, one of our nurses spoke up and said, "Well, I suppose if we were doing perfect depression care, nobody would kill themselves. Nobody would die from suicide." And I'm actually getting emotional telling you this because the room was quiet for what seemed like an hour.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be. It's really a striking comment.
It was as if someone had taken the air out of the room. And then finally, one of our senior clinicians, kind of a gruff guy, kind of a curmudgeon, but you know, everybody loved him. He spoke up and said, well, that's crazy. You know, if somebody wants to kill themselves, what could we possibly do to stop it?" And that moment launched the transformation of our entire healthcare delivery system. We began to have a conversation wherein we said, you know, he may be right. If somebody really wants to do this, it may be impossible for us to prevent it. But if zero isn't the right goal for us, what number is the right goal, for heaven's sakes? And is it 10? or 12 a year? And does that number include your sister or my father?
It just doesn't align with perfection either, does it?
It doesn't.
No.
It has to be zero. We have to say no one is going to die from suicide in our organization. And that's what we committed to. And while it started out as being one of six perfection goals, it was so audacious, it was so over the top, that it became the overarching goal for our entire initiative. Setting such a goal really forces you to think completely differently about everything that you do.
So does this have transformative power in the culture? And I guess mostly with primary care physicians, can you actually get them to think differently about what they're doing with a goal like that?
Well, you absolutely can. In fact, you can't even begin to conceptualize such goals and conceptualize how you might approach them unless you think completely differently. You know, I think it was Einstein who had the quote, and I'm probably going to botch it here, but his quote went something like, you can't solve current problems by thinking about them in the same current way. You know, you have to think very differently about it.
Hmm.
You know, a good example of this, I think, was President John Kennedy, when in the early 60s, we woke up one morning and the United States discovered that the Russians had just launched a satellite into space. And you may recall that at that time, we had no space program at all, much less anything in space. And everyone in this country freaked out. Well, he could have done a number of things. He could have said, look, I want to respond by making the United States the best space program, you know, in the world. But that wouldn't really have done the job, and he knew that. So what he said instead was, we're going to put a man on the moon in 10 years and bring him back safely. An incredibly audacious goal. And remember, at the time, NASA did not exist. We didn't have a space program.
So it seems completely unobtainable and, as you say, audacious.
Yeah, and yet look what happened and the history of what NASA achieved over the ensuing decades was a direct result of that incredibly smart and a very audacious goal that President Kennedy put to our country. It was very specific. It was very measurable. And it was audacious. And so that's what we did. And as I said a moment ago, that audacity it became the driving force for everything that we accomplished subsequently.
Well, what I'd like to do is sort of step back for a second and ask you to tell us about the current situation with suicides. I mean, we've been talking about suicides, but we haven't actually described what's going on with suicides in the country, how, you know, what the rate is, how many people commit suicide. But before I do that, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
Balancing on one wounded wing, circling the edge of the never-ending, the best of the vanished marvels are gathered inside your door. More than begin, but less than forget, but spirits born from the not happen yet, gathering there to pay off a debt.
We are back with Dr. Ed Coffey. Dr. Ed Coffey is a neuropsychiatrist. He will be giving a free public talk in Santa Fe October 17th and a free public talk in Albuquerque October 18th. Just search for UNM Psychiatry and click public talks. And Dr. Coffey, if you would, could you just sort of give us the general background on suicide today? What's going on with suicide today in the United States?
Well, I wish I had good news, but in fact, the news is bad. The rate is increasing in this country over the past 20 years. It's gone from about 10 in every 100,000 people to now approaching 13. And there are particular groups that are bearing the brunt of this change. The middle-aged white male is experiencing dramatically increased rates of suicide over this same time frame. The problem, there is variation across our country. Some states do better, some states do worse. And unfortunately for New Mexico, the news is not good either. New Mexico has the second highest rate of suicide of all the states in the U.S. And its rate is about 50%, at least 50% higher than the U.S. population. So at the most recent data gathering, the rate in New Mexico was about 21 per 100,000, again, compared to that U.S. rate of about 13 per 100,000. And it's been higher. The rate in New Mexico has been higher than the U.S. rate over this entire time period.
Why would that be? Why would New Mexico have a higher suicide rate?
We don't know. We don't have firm science on this issue, and it could be a number of reasons. It could be everything from the prevalence of substance use. We know, for example, that substance use, and in particular drinking, alcohol drinking, is associated with suicide thinking and behavior. Suicide tends to be an impulsive act. The thought of it can sort of pop into one's head very quickly, and it can have great intensity behind it. But if you can buy some time, the impulse typically subsides, and the person will be fine for the next period of time. Mental illness is another big contributor, and obviously if you have a good mental health care system in which patients are getting good mental health care, then the likelihood of a person dying from suicide also goes down. So there are many, many factors. The availability of weapons. In this country, most suicides occur by guns. If you don't have guns, it makes it much harder to complete the act. So there again, that's a potential contributing factor. In the state of New Mexico, there's also, interestingly, very wide variation in the rates of suicide. They range from 10 per 100,000 all the way up to 66 per 100,000 across counties, even within the state of New Mexico.
Wow, that's an incredible range.
Yeah, a six-fold range. And again, we don't fully understand that. The final frightening thought here is that these official statistics are probably conservative. They are probably underreporting the true rate of suicide because there may well be deaths out there that are coded as accidents that, in fact, were suicides. So, for example, you take the driver in a single car accident at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this exact question.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, the driver goes off the road or drives into an embankment, kills himself or herself. Was that really an accident or was it, you know, was it something else?
The idea was that you have to intentionally try to harm yourself or kill yourself in order for it to be a suicide. That's sort of the definition, right?
That's right. And unless someone leaves a note or some clear indication, you know, that what they're doing is obviously suicide. So if you shoot yourself, that's pretty obvious. But driving off the side of the road without a note, without leaving a note or without any other indication, you know, the coroners can't code that as a suicide. It's not definitive. But in many of those cases, it may well be. So these numbers, as bad as they are probably underestimates. So if you do the math, we're looking at a suicide in this country every 15 minutes or so.
Yeah, I saw, I think there was a total last year, or the last reporting year, of 44,000 suicides. And that compares with, I think, 38,000 traffic deaths. We hear a lot about traffic deaths, improving car safety. We don't hear nearly as much about restricting suicide, limiting suicide.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And this links to one of the challenges in trying to do something about it, and that is that we don't talk about it. We are afraid to talk about it. It's taboo in many cultures, including the American Indian culture. So that just adds to the challenge of trying to address what is, at the end of the day, a very preventable death.
So going back then to the Zero Suicide Initiative, if the suicides were 10 per 100,000 or 13 per 100,000, I think you had about 100,000 patients in your system, and therefore, when you're trying to get to zero, that is truly an audacious goal, right?
Well, it is. And now let me give you another number here that's important to for perspective. So that 13 per 100,000 number is the rate in the general population. If, however, you focus on patients with a mental disorder, so let's take depression or anxiety disorder, the rates in that group of individuals are 20 to 25 times higher than the general population. 20 to 25 times higher. So instead of 13 per 100,000, you're looking at something around 200 to 250 per 100,000.
Wow.
So going from that number to zero is even more audacious.
I know you achieved some remarkable results. One year you actually had zero suicides, and in general you had 80% reductions in suicide.
I believe that the two things that we did that made the biggest difference were, number one, we got very good at restricting means. I'll say a word about that in a moment.
Okay.
And then number two, we improved the speed with which patients in our healthcare system were recognized at being at risk for suicide and got treatment for it right away. Of those two things that we did, and by the way, both of those are scientifically validated approaches to suicide prevention. Of those two, I believe the most effective intervention was the former, was the restriction of access to means.
No kidding. So it wasn't necessarily a systemic change. It was this specific thing that made a huge difference, restricting lethality, really, in essence.
Well, it was systemic in that we got better as an organization at working with patients and families to be mindful of the risk of suicide and to do something about making their homes safer. So once we had identified a patient who might be at risk for suicide, and by the way, as I mentioned a moment ago, it's not just people with depression. So if you have any of the major mental disorders, depression, bipolar, anxiety, schizophrenia, substance use and abuse, if you have any of those, and particularly if you have one or more of those in combination with substance use, your rates are very, very high. So we did, although we called our initiative Perfect Depression Care, we didn't limit the improvements we were trying to make.
I see. So I got a misimpression, really, that you weren't concentrating on these other illnesses, but that's not the case.
That is correct. And your confusion is our fault because we called it Perfect Depression Care. But in fact, we realized pretty quickly that if you're really going to bend the needle here, move the needle on in terms of suicide, you've got to focus on all these populations. But anyway, the point is that means restriction is really, really important. So once we identified a patient at risk, we would have a very frank conversation with that patient, family present, if at all possible, and it was almost always possible. There are very few patients who would ever object to that. And we would say, look, you've got a really serious illness, and this illness could kill you. You know, we didn't mince words. We were very straight. Look, this illness can kill you. And the way it can do so is in large part through suicide. Now, you don't want that, and we don't want that. So let's talk about how we're going to ensure that will not happen. And then, of course, we did it a bit softer, and it took a few more minutes, but that's the gist of the conversation. Then we got into the issue of how suicide occurs, the fact that in most cases it's by guns, and then a conversation, okay, do you have guns at home? And what can we do now to make those guns safer? Can we get them out of the house? That's the preferred option. Is there a friend? Is there a local gun club? Is there somebody that you could let hold those guns just until this gets better? Or could we lock them up in the safe? And could we remove the ammunition from the home? The idea here was to make it as difficult as possible to act on that impulse when it comes up. And so we got, I think, very good at that, and I believe that accounted for the dramatic reduction in suicide rate that we saw in our system.
Well, I'd like to pick up on that in just a moment, but we're going to take a short break. We will be back in 30 seconds.
We thought we lost you. Welcome back.
We are back on New Mexico, People, Places, and Ideas. My name's Stephen Spitz, and we're speaking today with neuropsychiatrist Dr. Ed Coffey. Dr. Coffey will be giving a free public talk on October 17th in Santa Fe and October 18th in Albuquerque. If you want more information on these talks, go to the UNM Psychiatry page and click Public Talks. You mentioned earlier, I'd like to go back to one other thing you mentioned, and that was the quick referrals that you managed to, it seemed to me to be a major change. First of all, you would identify the people. It wasn't just self-reporting. You actually did screening. And then when the screens came back as someone at risk, you set up a same-day referral. So the primary care physician wasn't faced with, well, what do I do? Do I do nothing? Do I set up an appointment for days or weeks from now with a clinical therapist? Or do I send the person to the emergency room? The primary care physician isn't all that much trained at making this decision. It seemed to me like you changed that a great deal.
Yes, that was a very important part of what we did, especially when we began to spread the protocols from the mental health system to the entire general health system, you know, into general medicine as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, our primary care doctors are just facing unbelievable challenges. They've got 12 minutes to cure world hunger. You know,
exactly,
I mean,
they're
seeing a patient.
They got to sit at their computer and write it all down in the 12 minutes.
Well, exactly. And so they end up taking it home at night, and they work on that till midnight. And so their worst nightmare, of course, is to be seeing a patient and, you know, for a routine general medical condition, and then discover that the person has perhaps depression and they might be suicidal, because now you're looking at hours of work to get that patient situated. And so it's a daunting task. And we had to figure out a way to encourage our colleagues in general medicine to ask about suicide, but then not to end up overburdening them with the work that would be required to manage that situation if, as you say, the screen turned out to be positive. And so the way we did that was that we committed to them, said, look, if you have a positive screen, we are there. We're by your side. Call us. Come down the hall. Get us. We will take this issue off your hands. And once we did that, it opened the door to an incredibly effective collaboration. Now, we learned after a while that screening was a little bit less critical in the mental health system. Because, as I mentioned a moment ago, once you have a mental illness, your risk of suicide is quite high. And so our approach became one in which if you have or have had a mental diagnosis, then we're going to work closely with you to make sure that we're still doing everything we can to prevent suicide, even if today, at this particular moment, you don't think that's an issue or you're not thinking about it. We're still going to be on top of this.
So I want to mention something that everybody talks about now when they talk about healthcare, which has nothing to do with healthcare, and that is the cost. Now, you were an HMO, so presumably, what you were doing increased the cost, or did it?
Well, a couple of points, and that's an excellent question. We at Henry Ford, we did own and operate an HMO. And that accounted for about 25 to 35% of the patients that we're talking about. The other 65% of patients. The other two-thirds were those with the typical health care insurance. So we did not limit our improvements, of course, to just the HMO population. We provided them for every patient. But what the HMO provided us was an opportunity to measure the rates, because in an HMO, you have a defined population. You have a denominator. So we can count not only the numerator, the number of suicides, but the total population in which those suicides occurs. So that was the advantage of having the HMO. Does that help?
It does, but far as what happened with costs, I mean, yes.
Thank you. Being in an HMO, and in fact, being in Detroit, where money was not plentiful, we knew early on that if the only improvement we could come up with was going to cost a bunch of money, then it would be dead on arrival. It just would not last. There was no room in the economy of the health system to be able to substantiate and support something like that. So we had to create systems that did not increase the overall cost. And what we ended up doing, and the way we solved that challenge, was we just stopped doing things that didn't work, that we've been doing, I'm embarrassed to tell you, forever, but that really weren't adding any value. So I mentioned a moment ago screening in the mental health population. We might have been doing, in some cases, extensive screening, which really added very little to the management of the care, particularly when you realize that this patient is already at very, very high risk. I mean, you know, what else do you need to know?
Yeah, he needs to be treated. She needs to be treated.
He or she needs to be treated, and we need to start having a conversation about how to make the house and your life safe. So we got time to have that conversation by not spending time on unnecessary extensive screening, as one example.
So one final question, because we're really at the end of the show. You know, zero suicide's gotten a lot of attention, and deservedly so. But my impression, just from general reading, is it hasn't caught on as much as I think it should have. And my question is, why? Why isn't it being more broadly adopted?
The good news is that I'm having this interview with you. I'm going to be visiting your state to talk about this. Your state has received a federal grant to support this kind of work. On the other hand, the issue of suicide remains highly charged. It still suffers from the stigma around mental health and suicide in particular. There's a lot of work that has to be done in terms of creating a culture in which we can encourage our healthcare workers to shoot for perfection, but to not punish them if mistakes are made.
Well, I'm sorry to say we're out of time. I would like to thank my guest today, neuropsychiatrist Dr. Ed Coffey. Thanks also to my producer, Jefferson White. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Shebeki. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of the show are downloadable on iTunes. Archives of my past shows are at stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.